Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. Monday evening again, Edwin is back. And Edwin, the stupidity continues.
Yeah, well, it does, Martin, it does. And that's why we've got the show. And that's why we've got our followers and viewers, because they need a Giggle Monday laugh. And they also need to really try to understand what's happening out there, because there's a lot happening. There's a lot of moving parts. And if you're not careful, you can get caught like a kangaroo in the headlights and get smacked real hard, which a lot of people are doing. We're helping a number of families at the moment that have not that we've assisted with the purchase. They went out off on their own, and what turns out to be a small defect, as they called me in to help them out with. And I ended up falling through the through the floor when I put my, because the bearers and the joists were just totally eaten by termites that the so-called building inspection that the agent provided folks did not pick up. So now a cheap building inspection report that they bought that they thought detailed everything. It didn't. That they paid $450, $315,000, and still moving upwards is what's cost them. So yeah, there's a lot of moving parts out there. About, mainstream media spruiking. The underquoting regs are being stretched again. The bait advertising's happening, which we're going to talk about a bit about that later on as well. And saw your video that you put out there as well. And so many things happening. And hey. Ho, 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 Christmas is around the corner.
Absolutely. Well, just a stake in the ground or two here. So the latest data is that residential real estate is now worth more than $12 trillion. This is according to Catalyst, and they're drawing data from all over the place, including RBA and APRA and ASX. They'll compare that with the superannuation industry at $4.3 trillion, listed shares at $3.6 trillion, and commercial real estate at $1.2 trillion. And there's about 11.4 million dwellings. And that's interesting because, of course, there's just over 10 million households. So there's quite a few people who have more than one property. And this is the other shocking thing, is that the housing wealth held in housing is 55.5%. So more than half of all household income is sitting in housing. And the other interesting statistic, and this is one I think people probably don't know about, the total sales over the last year is only 544,481. Now, when you just think about that, boy, that is quite a small number. So, you know, all of this noise about property transactions and things, 544,481, just worth putting in context.
Yeah, this is what we've been saying for a long time, Martin. This is that the selling numbers, the sales numbers are very low across the board. The numbers on the portals that we've been discussing for the last 3-4 years, comparing them from the domain as per domain region for the Sydney, Melbourne regions, they've been very, very low. And to think in New South Wales alone, we have 50,000 real estate agents, of which close to 32,000 now are selling agents on the ground, and then there's not a lot of food to go around. That's why, again, we on LinkedIn, I'm going to talk about the dangers that many offices are going to be facing in 2026, which is closure because of the AML regulations that are coming in. We've got the AML, another layer of supervision that has to be put in place in the offices, another layer of costs, administrative costs that small business operators have to contend with, apart from franchise fees and every other fee that they get hit with, super and everything else. So I mean, small businesses and a lot of the operators in the real estate industry are small businesses. I could see a retraction of numbers of offices across New South Wales by up to 30%, and all because of this extra layer of compliance that that the AML is going to bring in from July 2026. But They're going to start putting into basically piloting it with a legal fraternity from March 2026. But it's the unknown that's scaring a lot of officers already, and they are basically calling it quits. There's a lot more rent rolls on for sale. There's a lot more people talking in the industry about leaving the industry, retiring. They've had enough. Add to that the pressures that keeping the doors open. It's not cheap. So all this, going back to the numbers that you pointed out in the low sales numbers, just adds more weight to the fact that you and I were talking about 2019, where the industry was where it is right now. It's in a lot of pain. It's in a close to the edge of the precipice, and but for the pandemic, it was saved, and it's been going gung ho in a sense, because and other small businesses as well as other industries where the JobKeeper saved them. But now we've done full circle and we're back. So those low sales numbers represent a lot of pain in the industry, and regardless of the fact that the property prices have gone up in many cities except Melbourne. So, we've got a lot of pain out there, folks. A lot of pain. I'm not saying for our followers and our viewers to go to mass on Sunday and light a candle for the real estate industry. I'm not saying that, but there is a lot of pain in the industry, unfortunately.
Well, and talking about the real estate industry, the other interesting observation is we're getting more and more media coverage now of the really worrying trends in terms of behavior within the industry. This one, of course, was quite interesting. Don't ask, don't tell real estate agents tricks to duck price laws. And they're talking here about no offers, refuse to accept an offer before an auction, fake the price, don't put a genuine valuation figure in the contract, don't ask, don't tell, and what about bogus comparables as well? In fact, I made a show you mentioned earlier on called Gazumping and Underquoting City, and specifically highlighted the fact that in New South Wales, they're now talking about increasing the fines for underquoting in New South Wales. And of course, they make the correlation hit with property markets heating up. But the point again here, Edwin, is you can make rules and regulations all you like, but if you don't police them, if you don't enforce them, what's the point? And it's worth highlighting that in Victoria, there were significantly enhanced underquoting rules and regs put in a few years ago. Nothing changed. Why? Because nobody policed it.
Yeah, if now that I'm back on LinkedIn, I'm looking at my old published articles that I put there on LinkedIn from close to 10 years ago, and this is when even before then I was already talking about underquoting and how it was flying in the face of the regulators, because a slap across the wrist, a slap on the wrist is not going to curve the industry, because the industry is a big hairy monster that can take a lot of pain. But when you start comparing now, so move forward 10 years and you start comparing the actual fines that are being dished out, it's just lunch for some of the people involved in the industry, Martin. It's $2,000 fines for the pain that somebody's going through. I'll tell you what's going to happen, and this is what I put on LinkedIn for those people that want to follow me on LinkedIn. I've got the video on LinkedIn. They're a little bit long, and if they're following on LinkedIn on the other social media, and also X, of course, I try to do as much there and tag you on them. And so, follow me across those two platforms, you will see what I've been talking about over the last week or two, and that is the real change is going to happen in the industry. Which again, you and I have been talking about this for over 3, 4, 5 years. And that the real change is going to happen when the vendors themselves prosecute the agents, because the vendors have been promised, for example, they've been promised $2.2 million They go out with a guide of $1.8 million. The property gets sold for $1.95 million. And this is a real example, right? This is a real example I'm giving our followers and our viewers. And you know, at the end of the day, what happened to the promise of the $2.2 million? What happened to the $250,000 shortfall of the promise that it was done verbally? You know, maybe even been put on the agency agreement on the CMA, and you could hold the vendors are going to start, in my opinion, are going to start holding the agents to account. So you've got this. There was this video by Current Affairs that's been going around that I also referred to in one of my LinkedIn posts, with regard to the family that had a house in Quakers Hill, from memory, and they got told that the house was worth $1.8 million. Our mate JT went out with a guide of 1.2. I believe it got sold for 1.55, or 1.5. I mean, it was a long journey from 1.2 to 1.8, right? So what I'm saying is that, there's in the article I write, it takes two to tango and three to cha-cha. So in other words, look, unless if you're a vendor and you believe you've got clean hands, well, prosecute it because you will have a strong case. But in most cases, the unfortunate thing, Martin, the vendor is colluding with the agent. The agent the agent's playing shenanigans, and the agent and the auctioneer are also colluding. They're all in it. Now, I'm not saying in all cases, and this isn't by all means legal advice or a legal observation. This is my opinion, my personal observation, and this is the shit that's happening. So it takes two to tango and three to have a real show, right? A real theater play, and this is what's happening out there. But there will be cases where vendors are going to start prosecuting, and that's when change will occur, because it's hard for the regulators. This is as much as I've talked about the regulators not having any teeth for a number of years. I've also said that the regulators are understaffed, underfunded, under-resourced. And to prosecute a case of underquoting is very, very costly. And to get the evidence, it is very, very time-consuming and cumbersome. But the people, and at the end of the day, it's for a $2,500 fine. So you can imagine the resources required to prosecute a case, and then the agent only gets slapped with a $2,500 fine. It doesn't make sense. But when you believe that you've lost $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, because that's what the agent told you were going to get, and they decided to play silly buggers or decided to bait advertise and play shenanigans with the marketing campaign, and you end up $150,000, $200,000, $250,000 short of what you were promised when you gave them the listing, well, again, it's not legal advice, but I say that that's a very strong case to prosecute. And I encourage you to do so. And that, Martin, that is the only time that we will see a major change in the industry. Until that happens, hey, as I said, $2,500, it's lunch for many.
Absolutely right. And, the industry is rigged in such a way in favour of the industry itself rather than actually to the benefit of the people participating in the industry from both a seller's and a prospective purchaser's point of view. And, in that earlier show about gazumping and about underquoting, I went on to make the point that the media and some of the property portals and the lack of good information, which is available now, it's harder and harder to get good information if you're an ordinary punter, is all part of the same strategy to make it more and more difficult for people to actually make good decisions because information isn't actually readily available. And that's a real problem. Because, of course, if you don't have good information, then you don't often make good decisions. So that's pretty important. And just on the information front, it's worth highlighting the long-term and permanent movements still look to be rising. And, if you actually translate that into net overseas migration, as IFM have done, suggests that the migration levels are still quite a lot higher. And by the way, also, we had a significant drop in the unemployment rate, and that really took the interest rate cut off the table completely. Now a lot of people are now forecasting no rate cuts at all through 2026. And we also should just highlight the fact, Edwin, that the investor loans have gone boom. The latest data, the quarterly data from the ABS, showed there was a massive run up in property investor lending. Some of the highest for years, and about 40% or more, over 40% actually, of all new loans were for investors. And it's interesting to me that that's right at the point when, of course, the government first grants with the 5% were making it more accessible potentially for owner-occupier first-time buyers. And so you've got actually investors and owner-occupier first-time buyers both in the market contending for the same property. So no surprise perhaps that you see a little bit of upward movement down at the bottom there in the cheaper parts of the property market. But the truth is that the market is still relatively dysfunctional. There are people paying over the odds in some places, but the general story of, oh, everything's rising massively, is far too simplistic. As we often say, you need to actually go and look at the interesting areas locally, because the fact is, we have high demand. And of course, the other point there, if you want to be a little bit provocative again, well, the home building is continuing to slide backwards. According to this report, about 4,000 fewer homes were built in the first year of the housing accord compared to the 12 months prior in New South Wales. So that's pretty interesting, really, that we're not building enough of new stuff, but it's part of a much bigger problem. And that's why it's really important that people actually get good information locally to be able to really understand what's going on, because if they don't, they're going to be all over the place. And I guess the other point, Edwin, just sort of, spinning around these things, this build-to-rent story, which is now coming in, is another part of the supply story. But actually, it's not necessarily going to help. And in fact, you highlighted this particular X or tweet, which is Labour's decision to slash the withholding tax to foreign corporate landlords from 30 to 15% is, as Malcolm says, a slap in the face to everyday Australians. Let's call it what it is. Build to rent is build to never own. It's designed to lock Australians into a lifetime of renting from foreign billionaires, while those same corporations pay less tax than the hardworking people they're renting to. I mean, that's a fair call, isn't it?
Look, it is, Martin, and it's all theatre. It's all theatre, what the government are doing, what they're saying, what they're saying they're going to do, all the announceables. It's all theatre. It's like it's a circus, bringing out the clowns for now and the lion tamers, closer to the end of the year. It's going to be, and the magic show will follow soon after that. The magic really starts when you start making all these numbers disappear. We're going to stop hearing about the 1.2 million homes that are meant to be built. That's when the magic starts. When somehow all that information disappears from the internet, maybe after December 10. When you and I can't, going to be gagged and can't talk about it anymore. But all that information is going to disappear, right? And that's a magic show. So look, this is the theater. This is the smoke and mirrors, because construction is never really meant to be cheaper, because you need to maintain the construction costs high in order to not to build as much. But you have to ramp up the demand for the prices to remain, to stabilize where they are. You mentioned earlier on that some markets are obviously acting a lot differently than others. Some are still creeping higher and higher very quickly, like it's almost like they're on supercharge, but they're in nitrous to follow. But there are other markets that have actually flattened out, they've plateaued, they've hit a ceiling. And these are the markets that people have got to be very careful. And the dynamics that are being played in those markets, and you'll see in those markets where you hit ceilings, where there's a lot more shenanigans going on by the selling agents, because they're promising the potential vendors, or the vendors have promised them the world. But it's very difficult to break certain ceilings in certain areas for various reasons. We won't go into too much detail, right? But in this case, Martin, what I think from Malcolm's post, what I got from it is, and I started thinking about it, is really construction is really not going to go down anytime soon. Construction costs is not going to go down. No matter how many skilled workers the government brings in, it's not going to assist in bringing down the costs of construction. And now here's my next prediction based on this. As I was meditating on that tweet today and was thinking about what we're going to share today, here's my next prediction: land ownership is going to be slowly be wound back, similar to what we're now seeing in Victoria. Right now, I don't know how long it's going to take, but be prepared for a lot of other states to follow suit with what's happening in Victoria. So it's not necessarily that the government's going to take over, you know, with force your hand to hand it over, your the private ownership of your principal place of residence, let's say, or the quarter acre block or 320 square meter block that you've got your house on. But it's going to be very difficult to keep it, is what I'm saying. And that is a form of losing or handing it over to these big corporations, because they're the only ones that are going to be able to buy it, because look at what's happening in Victoria. So that's my prediction for moving forward. I hope that it doesn't happen in New South Wales, what we're seeing happening in Victoria, but hey, we can only hope. History will be the tale. So that's my call on that, Martin, is from what he's saying. And this is why I say it's really all smoke and mirrors. It's the theatrics. It's the circus. Just playing out the way it's meant to play out, because nobody here in Australia is in control.
Well, it does seem to be that way. And you know, there are consequences of the stupidities in the markets. And I guess, depending on your point of view, you could argue that this particular story here is an interesting commentary on life. You know, an IT worker who arrived in Australia as a student 20 years ago has now bought 56 homes, 18 of which were bought in the last 5 years. He claims he isn't being greedy by buying so many. And that stirred up a bit of a hornet's nest, didn't it?
Look, it has, and it's been doing the rounds across many social media platforms. And this is interesting. When I got this in my feed, and Hood Law or Os Hood Law put that out. And the interesting part here is what they're talking about is nothing different to what you and I have been saying, that the Witcher chatters have been doing for a very long time. And in order to have that kind of, you've got to have the serviceability. I mean, the banks aren't stupid. You've got to have the cash flow and the serviceability. And what's the only way to build a cash flow? Because when we know that no matter which way you look at buying an investment property in Sydney or in other parts of Australia, even if you've got a 20% deposit, the serviceability is not going to cover the loan. And there's only so much that you can negatively give. A lot of the homes that have been bought, no doubt, are homes that have being a salvaged home, so you've got very little to no negative gearing anyway. So therefore, the only other option is really to take it off the rental books, the normal rental books, the mainstream rental books, and you start doing what the Witcher chatters have been doing. You start looking at your budget accommodation, which is what the thread in that post or the comments in that post started unraveling. And for me and for yourself and for our followers and you, it's nothing new. Now, the thing that I want to clarify today is that if many believe or people believe that the banks aren't aware of this, mm-hmm. Well, you're still, you're mentally still in a lockdown situation. Because the banks are very well aware of this. The banks are very, very well aware of this. And, as much as you hear stories of crackdowns and this and that and liar loans and everything, but it's very broad and extensive, and it's not going to be no different to the bait advertising, false and misleading advertising and underquoting in the real estate industry, in the banking industry. This is a big, big issue, big deal. And if you start cracking the whip and really prosecuting, well, guess what? The losers are going to be the banks, because we're going to have an avalanche of properties on the market if they really start scrutinizing the banks. And you yourself and Robbie and Uppercut Adams, you know, spoken about this at length, and you know, are across this. And this is why we're able to, when I say that we get properties that come on the market that are genuinely off market, that don't get advertised on Domain and Real Estate or any other platforms other than your WeChat platforms and other platforms that the WeChat chatterers use. This is because, you know, we're able to see and walk through homes. We're not allowed to take photographs or videos of the interior of the properties that have been put on the market for sale outside of the normal channels, because you get to see, you know, your double bunks, two double bunks in a small bedroom that's no bigger than 3x2. And you've got double bunks out there, and in every bunk, each individual is paying close to 250, depending on where you are, close to 250 to 350 per bunk, by way of budget accommodation. So when you've got a three bedroom house, the living room, the family room, every other part of the house becomes a room, and you just add more bunks, and that is the only way that you keep these cash flows happening. I'm not an economist. I'm not a mortgage broker, but I see and I know what goes around in the industry and what's been going around. And this isn't new. This isn't new. This method of creating cash flow in order to fund future investments isn't new. What's shameful is how the government has allowed it to happen. And it's created the demand for people to jump in and buy, literally, you know, buy on a whim. And before you even to think that when you bought in Kings Park before the announcement of 5% deposit scheme, right? Where you bought in Kings Park a week or two before then. By the time you settled, your property went up in value by $150,000. That's what happened. And when you've got this sort of ad hoc policies, is that what happens in that those price bands that the first home buyers, the local first home buyers, they just want a house, you know, to secure, to live in for the next 10, 15, 20 years, something to call home for a long time, and watch the kids grow up and put them in the local schools and grow old and leave the house in a pine box, as they used to say. You don't have that anymore. There was a story that I forgot to send to you, Martin. There was a chap over around the Central Coast over the weekend, and he was having coffee with his mate. He got a caffeine rush, decided to walk down the road, and there was a knock on, looked at the contract of sale, and he bought a dilapidated home for something like $766,000 or something, outbid five other first-home buyers that wanted to buy it. I mean, it was a dilapidated home. It was an unlivable home, but he bought it on a whim. That was the story. That's on the AFR. I didn't post it on the show today, but I will post it after you post this on the on X. I'll hang that on. But I may have already posted it on X. It made allude to that story. So if for those that follow me, you can find it.
Absolutely. And just to close out on this house for multiple occupation, the same's happening not just in Australia, but also in the UK. And more people are actually finding that the only way that the investment story works is now by splitting the property up into multiple separate accommodation pods, as it were, and charging for those. And of course, you can generate multiple incomes relative to a standard investment property. And that means that effectively it changes the game. So it's a different economy. This is a different set of economics. And in Australia, of course, the tax breaks for doing this are huge, because there's no limit to the number of investment properties that you can negatively gear. and no limit to what you can offset in terms of those costs of running investment property. So my view is that one of the government interventions that they should be looking at is to reduce the tax support and tax breaks for multiple investment holders. But of course, if they did that, they'd break the banks. So they're not going to do it. So that's just, you know, we are where we are. Now let's move the conversation forward, Edwin, because of course there was a discussion over the last few days about asbestos being found in sand, particularly in schools in the ACT and maybe elsewhere too. And I'm afraid that the asbestos story is one that just keeps giving. You know, I'm very passionate about raising the awareness of asbestos. Jill died of it, of course, because of the mesothelioma that she got as a result of exposure to asbestos. And when somebody, you know, reaches out and says help, I always try to help. And I just want to share with you a little bit of a discussion that I received the other day. This is actually, I won't mention who it is, but it's somebody in the New South Wales area, Edwin. But he's basically in a situation where he's looking to replace a 1970s kitchen next year. It's got 9-inch square vinyl tiles, and he's thinking about removing those tiles and then perhaps lay ceramic tiles. And he's worried about, is it likely to contain asbestos? And if it's, you know, a bit loose, they're a bit loose at the moment. And if they were to seal them, well, that may not be good because it's not necessarily going to be water resistant. And he got a few quotes for removing the vinyl floors in two rooms. And assuming there's no asbestos, it was a pretty significant cost. But of course, if it's got asbestos in it, then it's a much higher cost. And he actually shared a couple of pictures here. So you can see here, this is the kitchen, and you can see there the loose asbestos. Now, my perspective here is that if it's 1970s, it's more likely than not to have asbestos in those tiles, because asbestos was very much the product that was used as part of the manufacturing of those tiles. If they're loose, that means that they're likely to actually potentially be dust ridden, and it's going to be very difficult to work out precisely how to sort of seal it. But of course, getting the right advice, which is what he's asking for, and figuring out what to do is not straightforward. And just to remind everybody, there are about 28 different incarnations of asbestos in a house, including things like vinyl floors and wall coverings and plumbing and wiring and roofing and sheeting and pretty much everything that you can think about. So asbestos in homes is definitely still there. And any home built before, well, maybe before 2000 could have asbestos in it. But those in the 70s and earlier and the 80s and earlier are much more likely to. So, Edwin, what's your take on all this?
Oh, there's a lot of things that that are really creeping up now, and they're really coming to what we would call the use-by date, and they're going to start dilapidating and creating a lot more health issues across the board. You not only have the issue there of the potential asbestos in the actual vinyl tiles, but also you've got to be careful with the underlay. I've come across in many areas, in many renovation projects that we've done for clients, where you've got asbestos sheeting they laid on the floor in order to be able to get the floor even and stop the vinyl from sagging or cracking or for all sorts of various reasons, because you're laying it down on floorboards that obviously expand and contract in summer and winter, and they move, right? And if your piers sink, then your joists start to move as well for all these reasons. So you need this layer, a strong layer, flat, rigid, in order for the vinyl to sit straight, to sit flat. And not to lift. So you need that substrate to be very, very strong. Now, that's, you know, asbestos is one of the many issues that people need to contend with. I mean, a lot of the times you talk to family and friends and they're talking about, oh, there's such a lovely timber floor underneath the carpet. Oh, yeah, we're going to get it polished. That without realizing the fact that a lot of floorboards in years gone by, in the 40s and 50s, they used to be drenched in arsenic and all sorts of chemicals in order to prevent the the vermin from chewing it away. It was a form of vermin protection. The blackjack that we used to call in the industry, the blackjack that they used to glue the underleg down with. I mean, all these things, and you live with it. And the unfortunate thing, Martin, is this is where, as I've said before, and as I've been very public about my the voice that you're hearing now is not the not not wasn't my voice up until 1930. Before I was a baritone, now I'm a bit of a soprano. And it's all due to I believe it's all due to the chemical exposure that I exposed myself through in my younger days, because OH&S wasn't a real big deal when I was going through the trades. I did many trades, went to university as well, but I also did many trades in my younger days. Carpentry, panel beading, spray painting. I seem to always gravitate towards the fumes. It was just one of those things. So you've got all these other issues in households that people have got to become very, very weary of. So this is what we were alluding to. So now, bring it forward, 2025, 2026. There's a lot of dilapidation or breaking down of the product, and it's done to create more harm than what they did whilst they sat there dormant, intact, in one piece. So this is comes to wear and tear. Many people aren't even aware of the vermiculite that you find in a lot of the apartment complexes, the old apartment complexes, as many refer to as your popcorn ceilings. 50% of those across Australia, 50% of that, you could be assured that 50% has asbestos. And they drill into it, they put new light fittings into it. Then you've got cockroaches nest in it, and all sorts of shit. And people do all sorts of crazy things without even testing it. So my advice to this viewer and this follower of the show is, carefully. There's a loose tile, I believe, in one of the photos that you sent me, and I replied to that email too, by the way. Either get a professional to take that away, take it to a testing lab. That will break a small piece, or if you can, with gloves and cautiously at the open out the open yard carefully with gloves, break a small piece the size of a 20-cent coin, put in a sandwich bag, seal it up properly in those Ziploc bags, and you can take it to a testing station. They will charge $125 to give you the report within 3 days. Or you pay $175 and you can get the report within 24 hours, whether or not it contains asbestos. But as I said, oftentimes it's not only the tile that needs to be tested, it's the substrate or whatever is on top of the floor that, in order for the in the underlay, in other words.
Absolutely. So, I think the first point to make is, the follower here is asking exactly the right questions, and it's very important to make sure that you don't just assume everything's fine. If you're dealing with this sort of stuff, the risks are so high. The second is that there are different paths, but the first is to get it tested. And as you say, the testing stations, you can actually find those in the local directories, or indeed online. And you can send a small piece and they will test it. But as Edwin said, it isn't just necessarily the tiles itself, it's what it's sitting on, and the dust environment. Now, if in fact it does have asbestos, then you're into a very complicated process, because effectively, to remove all of that, you have to actually have the right gear, which includes breathing and coverage of your body. You have to have the right bags. You have to double bag it all and seal it up. And you have to actually have, the gloves and everything else, and then actually industrial strength vacuum cleaners to clean up all the dust and everything else. That's a quite long and complicated and frankly quite expensive process. But I don't think you can take risks with this stuff, Edwin. I mean,
No, you can't.
my wife died from exposure, years later. And there are still thousands of people who die each year in Australia, because of exposure to asbestos, it's one of these things that just isn't going away. And unfortunately, the story is, I think, because we're moving now into this phase where materials are deteriorating in situ, and there's also a lot of renovation of older properties going on at the moment, and there are still some fly-by-nights who don't seem to care about it and will just do the absolute minimum or do nothing at all. I remember seeing one professional asbestos remover stripped back to his waist because it was too hot, right? And was just, I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm thinking, these guys should know what they're doing, but they were taking risks too. So you can't take risks. So, and Edwin, I think you suggested that you might be able to have a direct interaction. So I will send the contact details forward to you so that you can actually pick up the conversation with this particular individual.
Yeah, look, 100%. The funny thing is also, Martin, just to close off with another interesting, funny and scary story at the same time is I've seen a lot of guys that remove asbestos. They've all got the PPE and all fully geared up. And then, but they, rather than taking it all off, they climb into the ute with the PPE gear, and they just sling the respirator over the shop, over the side of the neck, and then and drive it off.
It is.
So the whole family jumps into the ute to go to the footy.
And you know, I weep when I hear this because, you know, I saw what it did to Jill. You know, it killed her over a number of years, and it was a very painful, slow death. And you know, politically, nobody wants to touch this, but it is really important for individual homeowners or prospective homeowners or even people thinking about renting, you know, be asbestos aware, think asbestos, because it hasn't gone away. And this school's exposure story is just another warning. Unfortunately, we're going to see more ahead. Let's just move the conversation forward, Edwin, because you also mentioned the AML earlier on, and it's people need to understand what this means, because this is going to have a very significant impact on the market potentially.
It will. The unfortunate thing is that there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be basically unemployed because a lot of offices are going to shut down. They can't afford it now. They can't afford the running costs now, as I said earlier on. We're back to where we were in 2019, where the industry was on its knees, where I was talking about at the end of, mid to the end of 2019, if you recall, in our conversations, I was saying that there were many of my colleagues that were running offices at the time that were on the third, fourth credit card. And we're talking about credit cards of, 25,000 plus per credit card. And they were just basically jumping from one credit card to another just to keep the doors open. So this has the potential to do the same thing. And the stories are similar, because it's going to be another layer of governance, another layer of bureaucracy, another layer of costs that are going to be added on to the in compliance that's going to be added on to the small business operator. And guess what? They have to fund it. They have to fund it in order to keep operating, because if you don't have the right procedures in place, and if you don't have the right supervision in place, all this potentially you're going to more or less have either you have your own supervisor on hand, or somebody that's going to supervise this whole the whole AML procedures in your office, or you're going to have to contract somebody to come in twice a week, three times a week, whatever it is, or a couple of hours per day, however they're going to float this out next year. So this is a big issue in the industry. So we're going to hear more stories about it. But as I said earlier on, my prediction is that we're going to see a loss of close on to 30% of offices will shut down. They can't operate. They're on their knees now because of the low volume of sales. And if you don't have a rent roll, it's the sales commissions that basically keep your doors open. So with the low volume of sales, as you reported earlier on in the show, well, this is the pain. So it's just another level of pain. And many offices are still struggling with franchise fees and all the other fees. And you still got to pay, if you don't own the the freehold. In other words, if you don't own the actual office itself, the building that you've got your office in, you're paying hefty rents. I'm absolutely gobsmacked with the cost of rental space from the lower mountains to Katoomba. When I compare that to the cost of the rental space in the CBD, it's cheaper to rent an office in the CBD than it is to rent an office in the mountains, office space or commercial space. It's crazy, but this is what the man has done. So, your average office with, let's say, with five people in the office, a small rent roll of about 250, 275, in car leases and everything, you wouldn't get much change out of $45,000 a month in our goings before you start making a profit. And in a lot of the cases, Martin, the licensees or the directors in charge and the licensees aren't paying themselves. So this is where March, I think we're going to start seeing a lot of these stories come through. And obviously, and the other thing is, Martin, is the crazy thing is it's the unknown, right? So it's also not knowing how this is going to be rolled out, not knowing what it's going to be really required. And are people that are preparing from that story, is the Yogyakarta Hookah franchise, are they on the right track? Did they choose the right service provider? Did they choose the right service provider of the support of that of that app or whatever they're going to be using to comply with the legislation? Is that app going to capture what the regulators are going to want you to capture, or nobody really knows. That's the most scary part. Nobody really knows. Even the legal fraternity have been turned on their heads, and they themselves don't know what the hell's going on. So you've got banking, finance, legal, and the property sector are basically being turned on its head with these proposed new regulations and compliance policies and issues, major issues for the small business operators and the big operators as well. But yet nobody knows how to prepare, what to do.
And it's worth saying that the whole point is Australia has very weak AML, anti-money laundering legislation, in the context of property transactions. It's much more diligent elsewhere, but it seems to me that property has been a bit of a blind space. And that means that money has been definitely laundered through the property system in Australia. Pretty much, there was a report done a few years ago, and it was highlighting that property in Australia was one of the biggest money laundering rackets around, right? So they're trying to actually begin to tamp down it, but they're going very slow, and the rules and regs have, been hanging around but didn't really move forward at all. But the implications are that if you are a prospective purchaser of property, you're going to have to be able to justify where you got the funds to be able to actually make the transaction. And if you don't have documentary evidence of where you got the funds from, and there is, some guidance as to what that might look like, then you might not be able to transact. And I'll just give you a little bit of a flavor. When I recently bought a property in the UK, they had to they've got stronger AML rules and regs. I had to prove where the money came from for that particular transaction, which actually was a property sale that I did in Australia in the year 2000. So I actually had to pull out the documentation from that earlier settlement, and I had to show them the documentary path of where that money came from, the property sale, where it was lodged at the bank, where it had been ever since, so that they had an audit chat train, so that when I then bought my next property, they could see the dots being joined. That's a big on impost potentially on prospective purchasers too. So, the industry is worried about it, but I think some prospective purchasers need to be thinking a little bit harder about, can you prove where the money came from?
The other thing that the other added prickly pear to all this is your cryptocurrencies. You've got to prove, you've got to, yeah, it's really, as you said, this is the second phase of the AML. The first stage was brought in a few years back. Didn't really do much because it wasn't meant to.
No, exactly. It was deliberate.
But now it's supposed to mean a lot, supposed to do a lot, but let's wait until, like I said, there's nothing that a lot of people are preparing for various things. Obviously, something is going to happen, but the direction is not very clear. It's still very, very foggy. But it's certainly making an impact, nevertheless, in the industry. And whether that is, again, whether it's orchestrated, whether it's meant to flow out this way to create this confusion, because obviously the puppet masters are the ones that control the confusion, and they know what the outcome that they want to achieve at the end, regardless of what it may be. As you said, as a property buyer, as a seller, as an investor, there's you gotta you've got to be prepared. On face value, a lot of the changes and a lot of things that are going to happen, I'd say bring it on, especially when you're going to be dealing with a lot of these budget accommodation scenarios, where then you've got people that are going to that are leapfrogging from one investment property to another and to another and to another, and the banks turning a blind eye to the cash flows that are coming in from your budget accommodations and things like that. I mean, yeah, bring it on, bring it, because all that shit needs to stop. But with all this turmoil, Martin, I don't know whether things are really going to happen in July 2026.
No, well, we'll wait and see. And talking about the puppet masters, we could also talk about the climate stories, right, which have been rife this last week. And there are two takes, right, which we want to put side by side, which is just really highlighting it, right? The first one, guess how many people went to the COP30 in Brazil? 494 Aussies have travelled to Brazil for Climate Talk Fest. That's more than what the UK sent, more than double what the UK sent. And that came out from 2GB there. And the other one is, of course, the energy plans that have been announced for the future of Australia's energy is, well, it's simple, isn't it? It's perfect.
Yeah. Well, see, for the first slide, Martin, the thing is, look, first things first, right? And for all those the people that they just don't understand what the government's doing. The reason why we've got 494 delegates or people going over to Brazil is because Bowen's going to be at the meeting, and the other 493 are going to go to the tropical rainforest to plant trees. That's what Dusty tells me. That's what Dusty tells me, that because the Amazon is not going to be it's not going to have regrowth if we don't send 493 Aussies to go out there and plant trees, right? And as for the second slide, yeah, that is the plan. That is the plan of moving forward, how we're going to bring energy costs down, and how not only how the energy costs are going to come down, but how construction costs are also going to come down. I don't know if you see down the bottom there. It's very, very specific on the bottom right-hand corner. Energy costs are going down. See that line there and the arrow pointing down? That's energy. It's going to go down. Therefore, on the left-hand side, the other arrow pointing down is cost of construction is also going to go down. So happy days. We're going to get to the 1.2 million homes that the government promised.
I have to say, Edwin, that a kid probably drew that. I have a feeling a kid could come up with a better energy strategy. And it's interesting that the conservative side of politics, who sort of have now walked away from net zero, are promising that property the energy prices will drop, right? Without any justification for that, just as the previous Labour government promised that energy prices would come down. I don't see anything much that's going to actually change the trajectory of energy prices other than continue to rise. And as for meeting the target to build, as I said earlier on, the chances of us building the target over the next 4 or 5 years is pretty much in the same ballpark, right? It's not going to happen. So, you know, performative politics, we keep talking about it, right? They say one thing, they do something else. The opposition said something, they'll do something else. So I'm afraid that ordinary people are being caught. And in my surveys, I still see rising energy costs as one of the many rising pressures on households, which is why we've got half of mortgage holders in mortgage stress and 2/3 of renters in rental stress. I'm afraid the government is not serious about solving this stuff. They could. There are things they could do. But no, we can't do that. We've got to, you know, mustn't rock the boat. Let's look on at the statistics here. This is the numbers for the Sydney region based on the 10th of November. There were 24,281 properties for sale in the Sydney region, according to the domain definition of the Sydney region. A week later, 24,392. That's on the 17th. And your little chart here just shows what's going on with regards to the sale listings numbers, which are, well, still a little higher than last time. But what's really going on here, Edwin?
Well, again, as I said, we've got to be careful. The yellow there represents, in my opinion, what the real numbers of properties are. The extra 2,000 or so are the land envelopes that have come up over the last 12 months that are skewing the numbers and making it out like we've got really a lot more properties on market than what we've got last year. The interesting thing now is this the beginning of the retraction in, you know, for the Christmas season? Now, if you sort of walk back from the 23rd, more or less being the last active day of the industry, some jump in to the day or so before New Year's. So we start sort of looking 4 weeks back from that, is, or 5 weeks would be your last tranche of, you know, let's try to get out of the market by way of auction campaign. So the numbers are going to start, are they going to start receding now like they were in 2024 and you know, 2023? It may be so because we haven't had much of a rise as to what we had the previous weeks. But again, it's just the next couple of weeks will be telling tale. Melbourne is still strong. Melbourne's still, the numbers have crept up, albeit by a few hundred, but they're still going up. So from last week, 29,540 to this week's 29,731. Well, you know, that's still a steady rise, a couple of hundred, whereas we've only got not that many in Sydney. So we still have the potential to crack the 30,000 in Melbourne. But again, that's another story. It's another market. It's acting on its own.
Absolutely. And of course, the Melbourne market is still where a lot of the mis and disinformation is actually residing at the moment, because some of the top level spruiking is talking about a recovery in Melbourne prices. And, you know, when you actually look closely, there are a small number of houses that have actually exceeded asking price, but actually it's the exception rather than the rule. There's still more property coming on, and again, the quality of property is not great. But the other thing in Melbourne in particular is a lot of those are ex-investment properties, because the investment story in Victoria is, well, it's hard to make any sense of it now, and so people aren't, and they're looking to leave. And so there's been a bit of a rise in the listings of those ex-investment properties from people who are trying to get out. So expect more of that ahead, I think, Edwin.
100%.
Let's look at Brisbane just briefly. So Brisbane, of course, its own market. In my show the other day about gazumping and things, I mentioned Brisbane specifically. On the 10th, 3,371 properties. A week later, 3,363. So, you know, Brisbane, it's doing its own thing. then I would highlight the fact that in some of the property areas where prices are accessible to first-time buyers, there's quite a lot of interest in some areas. I've had a few reports of that. And looking at the auction story, well, it is going to quiet up now, isn't it, as we move into Christmas?
It will. It is going to, the numbers are going to retreat, but still this year's numbers aren't anywhere near the numbers that we had last year, because again, for a couple of very prominent reasons, in my opinion, is we've reached ceilings in a lot of markets, the traditional auction markets, and to break those ceilings, people are not going to try. And also in a lot of these traditionally auction markets is where the locals don't want to move further out. So there's nowhere else to go. So it comes back to the original points that we were making at the beginning of the show, and that is that the numbers aren't really there for people to downsize into, and therefore they're going to, the numbers in general terms to keep on feeding the industry and the auctioneers. I'd say 2026 is going to be where auctioneers are going to be on the food bank.
Absolutely, which suggests that you should negotiate hard on your commissions if you choose to use an agent, right? They'll be quite desperate to get your business. And of course, we'll then probably give you some exalted valuations to try and convince you to go with them. But we'll come on to that in a second. Let me just talk about the rents first. So in Sydney, on the 10th, 10,824. A week later, 11,464. So the number of rentals in the Sydney region went up slightly, although the actual availability is still relatively constrained. And in Melbourne, 12,069 on the 10th, compared with 12,211 a week later. So once again, it's a little bit of a rise, but not dramatically so. And again, I'm still seeing the same pressures on renters. I'm still seeing a lot of people in renting accommodation being confronted with more rental increases if they stay put. And of course, damn if you do, damn if you don't. If you don't stay put and try and find somewhere else, then you're competing with the other people also trying to find somewhere to live, because the number available is still relatively low, but the rental ask is continuing to rise. And that's the other factor, which of course is then inflating the overall costs. And that flows into the CPI number. Now, as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, you've got a little story here specifically about the games that agents are playing.
Yeah, this is episode 3 that I've been publishing across the social media platforms. And this is rather interesting because, as I said earlier on, that there are certain areas and certain markets in Sydney that have reached a certain high. My messy hair and gaspiness because I was working out at the gym and I decided to do the video. So the auctions, according to the video, I say that they had a real workout on the Saturday, and they did. And I bring out two examples. So this is where people that are potentially looking at putting the properties on the market in 2026, be careful as to what strategy your agent wants to go down, what they promise you, note it down what they promise you, and as you said earlier on, it is a great time to negotiate because agents are desperate for your business, regardless of the poker face that they show up with on the day to try and get your business. But it's very important that that you don't go along with the silly games that they play. Because it's really backfiring on in a lot of scenarios. I bring out two in that video that where our clients got the property well below the vendor's expectations and their reserve, and all because the agents wanted to play silly games on the day. They lost, the vendors lost. Unfortunate thing is that the agents still walk away with a commission. But this is where this is the whole thing where I say that. Don't be a party to it, because if it comes up short, you've got a very good chance of to prosecute if you're not aware that the agents are playing these games and then all of a sudden the sale is short. So be very careful. Also know that our services as property consultants, we do assist in the management of with people wanting to sell the home, we assist with the management. We oversee the management. You could you know, we're project managers in a way, you could say, to oversee the performance of the agent, the marketing campaign they choose, the commission that they want to charge, what they actually do, and we provide that as a service. But if you're going to do it on your own, you're going to be very, very vigilant. Oftentimes it's trying to also decipher the real estate speak that and all the BS they come up with. that's the whole thing. But as I've said in previous posts also, Martin, is make sure that the agents that you choose to with the sale of your property, make sure that they've got skin in the game. And if they don't have skin in the game, they're not the agent that you should be choosing. If they don't want to have skin in the game, and that could be different forms as well, which we won't go into detail. But that's what we do. We make sure that the agents that we choose for our clients have skin in the game, that are going to take carriage of the sale or the property, which is the most valuable asset, which is something that many need every single cent, especially if they're going to go into a home, downsize or move away or whatever the case may be. You just don't want to leave it to chance.
Absolutely. And to underscore that again, there are questions that you should be asking, or any prospective agency that you might continue to work with. And if you're going into selling a property that you have multiple agencies come and talk to you and ask the questions and make a good decision, because whether you pick a good agent or not will determine significantly whether you're actually able to achieve what you want to achieve or not. And just be careful also of all the add-on costs and other fees and charges that they sort of slip in under, the marketing charge and the charge for flying the drone and the charge for this and the charge for that, because these extra charges can also mount up. So make sure you get a clear itemization of the full costs that they're likely to incur, rather than just a high level, it'll be 1% or whatever, right? Those other costs are critical too.
100%, Martin. This is it. We're at a time where it costs a lot to buy, and it can cost you a lot more to sell if you get the wrong agent and the wrong advice.
That's very well, Edwin. Very important conversation again, as always. I appreciate it, and I'll look forward to doing it all again next week, when of course there will be more shenanigans to talk about. So we'll be back for another round then. I'll look forward to seeing you then.
Looking forward to it, Martin. All the best. You take care.
Cheers. Take care. Bye-bye.